Oxford Bookworms, Stage 4. Little Women by Louisa May Alcott, retold by John Escott. Read by Shelley Thompson. Published and copyright Oxford University Press, 1996. Cassette 1, Side 1. Chapter 1. Four Sisters. "Christmas won't be Christmas without any presents," said Jo crossly.
"It's so awful to be poor," agreed Meg, looking at her old dress. "It's not right for some girls to have pretty things and others to have nothing at all," said little Amy.
"We've got father and mother and each other," said Beth, gently.
The four young faces round the fire cheered up as they thought of this, but then Jo said sadly, "We haven't got father, and we won't have him for a long time." She didn't say, "Perhaps never," but each silently thought it, remembering that he was away at the war in the South. Then Meg said,
"Mother says we shouldn't spend money on presents when our men are fighting a war."
"We can't expect anything from Mother or each other," said Jo. "But we only have a dollar each, and that won't help the army much.
Let's each buy ourselves what we want and have a little fun. We work hard to earn it."
"I do, teaching those awful children," said Meg.
"What about me?" said Jo. "I'm shut up all day working for a terrible old lady who gives me different orders every 5 seconds."
"I think washing cups and plates and keeping things tidy is the worst work in the world," said Beth. "My hands get too tired to play my music.
I have to go to school with girls who laugh at my dresses and say cruel things because my father isn't rich," said Amy.
"I wish we had the money father lost when we were little, Jo," said Meg.
"I wish I was a boy," said Jo. "Then I could go and fight beside father."
Meg was 16 and very pretty, with large eyes and soft brown hair and white hands. 15-year-old Jo was very tall and thin. Her long, dark red hair was usually pushed up out of the way. Beth was 13, a very shy girl who seemed to live in a happy world of her own. Amy was the youngest, but thought herself to be the most important. She had blue eyes and yellow hair which curled onto her shoulders. At 6 o'clock, Beth put a pair of slippers by the fire to warm, and Meg lit the lamp. Amy got out of the comfortable chair without being asked, and Jo forgot how tired she was and held the slippers closer to the fire. "These are old," she said. "Mother needs a new pair."
"I'll get her some with my dollar," said Beth.
"No, I shall," cried Amy.
"I'm the oldest," began Meg.
"I'm the man of the family now father is away, and I shall buy them," said Jo.
"Let's each get her something and not get anything for ourselves," said Beth.
"That's a kind idea," said Jo. "What shall we get?" Everyone thought for a moment, then Meg said,
"I'll give her a nice pair of gloves."
"The best army slippers," said Jo.
"Some handkerchiefs," said Beth.
"A little bottle of perfume," said Amy. "It won't cost much, so I'll have some money left to buy something for me." We'll let Mother think we're getting things for ourselves and then surprise her, said Joe. Mrs. March arrived home soon after. She took off her wet things and put on her warm slippers. Meg made the tea, Joe brought wood for the fire, Beth was quiet and busy, and Amy gave orders. "I've got a letter from Father," cried Mrs. March. It was a letter to cheer them up, and the special message for the girls came at the end. "Give them all my love and a kiss. I think of them every day. I know they will be loving children to you, and that when I come back, I will be prouder than ever of my little women." A tear dropped off the end of Joe's nose. Amy hid her face on her mother's shoulder.
"I'm selfish," she cried, "but I'll try to be better."
"We all will," cried Meg. "I think too much about the way I look and hate to work, but I won't any more."
"And I'll try to be a little woman," said Joe, "and not be rough and wild."
Beth said nothing, but she began to work hard at a blue army glove she was making. So the four girls decided that they would all try very hard to be good. They would never be cross or lazy or selfish, and they would all help each other. They talked over their plan that evening while they made sheets for Aunt March. Then, at 9 o'clock, they stopped to sing a song. Beth played the old piano, and Meg and her mother led the singing. Joe always sang in the wrong place, but the girls never got too old to sing together. Chapter 2. A Happy Christmas. Joe was the first to wake up on Christmas morning, but soon they were all awake, and they went downstairs.
"Where's Mother?" asked Meg.
"I don't know," said old Hannah. She had lived with the family since Meg was born, and was more like a friend than a servant. "Some poor woman came to the door, and your mother went off to see what was needed."
"She'll be back soon," said Meg. She looked at the presents for her mother, which were in a basket under a chair, ready to bring out at the right time.
"Where is Amy's bottle of perfume?"
"She went to put some pretty paper round it, I think," said Joe.
Suddenly they heard the outside door close.
"Here's Mother. Hide the basket, quick," said Joe.
But it was Amy. She came in quickly.
"Where have you been, and what's that behind you?" asked Meg.
"I ran to the shop and changed the little bottle of perfume for a big one," said Amy. "I spent all my money to get it, and I'm not going to be selfish anymore."
Meg smiled proudly and put her arms around her sister. Then there was another bang from the outside door, and the basket was pushed back under the chair. The girls ran to the table, ready for their breakfast.
"Happy Christmas, Mother!" they shouted.
"Happy Christmas, little daughters," said Mrs. March.
Then the smile disappeared from her face. "Girls, listen. Not far away is a poor woman, Mrs. Hummel, with a new baby. Her 6 children are in one bed, trying to keep warm, as they have no wood for a fire. There is nothing to eat, and they are hungry and cold. Will you give them your breakfast as a Christmas present?" For a minute, no one spoke. Then Joe said,
"Mother, I'm so glad you came back before we began to eat."
and the girls quickly began to put their breakfast in a basket.
I knew you would do it, said Mrs. March, smiling.
She took the girls and Hannah to a cold, miserable little room in an old building where they found a sick mother, a crying baby, and a group of children with white, frightened faces. The children were on the bed under a blanket, trying to keep warm. The woman almost cried with happiness when she saw the girls. Hannah, who had brought wood, made a fire. Mrs. March gave the mother tea and hot food. Then she dressed the little baby gently. The girls put the children round the fire and fed them like hungry birds. It was a very happy meal, although the girls ate none of it. But no one was happier than those hungry young ladies who gave away their breakfast on Christmas morning. Mrs. March was surprised and pleased when she saw her presents later. There was a lot of laughing and kissing and explaining. Then, for the rest of the day, the girls were busy. Joe liked to write plays, and the four of them were going to act one that evening. They had learned their words and had worked hard to make strange and wonderful clothes for all the different characters in the play. On Christmas night, some other girls came to watch. At first, there was a lot of whispering and laughing from the four sisters behind the curtains. Then the curtains were opened, and the play began. It was an exciting story about Hugo, acted by Joe, wearing a black beard, beautiful Zara, and brave Rodrigo. There were also two ghosts, a cruel king, and a tall castle made of paper and wood, which, unfortunately, fell down just as Rodrigo and Zara were escaping from it. There were screams of laughter from everyone, but the actors picked themselves up and carried on through more dangers and mysteries until the happy ending was reached. All the visitors loved the play, and after the excitement and fun came a surprise for everyone.
"Would the young ladies like to stay for supper?" asked Hannah.
And when the girls saw the supper table, they could not believe their eyes. There was ice cream, cake, fruit, and French chocolate, and in the middle of the table were flowers for each of the four actors.
"Where did it all come from?" asked Amy.
"From Father Christmas, perhaps," said Beth.
"Mother did it," said Meg.
"Aunt March sent it," said Joe.
"You're all wrong," laughed Mrs. March. "Old Mr. Lawrence sent it."
"The Lawrence boy's grandfather?" said Meg. "But we don't know him."
"Hannah told his servant about your breakfast party, and that pleased him," said Mrs. March. "He knew my father many years ago, and he sent me a note this afternoon asking if he could send my children a few small Christmas presents."
"The idea came from that boy. I know it did," said Joe.
"I'm sure he wants to know us, but he's shy, and Meg won't let me speak to him when we pass him in the street. She says that it's not at all polite for young ladies to introduce themselves to strangers."
"You mean the people who live in the big house next door, don't you?" said one of the other girls. "My mother knows old Mr. Lawrence. She says he keeps his grandson in the house when the boy isn't riding or walking with his tutor and makes him study very hard. We invited the boy to our party, but he didn't come."
"That boy needs to have some fun," said Joe.
Chapter 3. The Lawrence Boy.
Look, said Meg excitedly a day or two later. She waved a piece of paper at Joe. An invitation to a New Year's party at Sally Gardner's house, and it's for both of us. Mother says we can go, but what shall we wear?
Our best cotton dresses, said Joe, because we haven't got anything else. Yours is as good as new, but mine has a burn and a hole in the back.
Then you must keep your back out of sight, said Meg. I'll have a new ribbon for my hair and my new slippers, and my gloves are all right.
Mine are stained, so I'll have to go without.
You must wear gloves to a dance, Joe, cried Meg.
Then we'll each wear one good one and carry a bad one, said Joe.
Meg looked worried. All right, but you will behave nicely, won't you? Don't stare, or put your hands behind your back.
On New Year's Eve, the two younger sisters watched the two older girls get ready for the party. There was a lot of running up and down, and laughing, and talking. Meg wanted some curls around her face, so Joe began to work on the papered ends of Meg's hair with a pair of hot tongs.
Should they smoke like that? Asked Beth.
It's the wetness drying, said Joe.
What a strange burning smell, said Amy.
I'll take the papers off now, said Joe, and you'll see lots of little curls. She took the papers off, and to her horror, the burnt hair came off with them.
Oh, oh, what have you done to my hair? Cried Meg.
I always get things wrong, said Joe unhappily.
I'm so sorry. I suppose the tongs were too hot. Don't worry, Amy told Meg, who was crying. Just tie your ribbon so that the ends come onto your forehead a little, and it will look quite fashionable.
At last, Meg and Joe were ready and went off to the gardener's house, where Mrs. Gardner welcomed them kindly. Meg immediately began to enjoy herself with Sally, but Joe wasn't interested in girlish talk and stood with her back carefully against the wall, watching the dancing. Soon Meg was asked to dance. Then Joe saw a big red-haired boy coming towards her, and she quickly went through a door into a small room. Unfortunately, another shy person was already hiding there, and she found herself looking at the Lawrence boy.
Oh, dear, I didn't know anyone was here, Joe said.
The boy laughed. Don't go. I came in here because I don't know any people, but I think I've seen you before, he said. You live near us, don't you?
Next door, said Joe. We enjoyed your nice Christmas present.
My grandfather sent it, Miss March. But you gave your grandfather the idea, didn't you, Mr. Lawrence?
I'm not Mr. Lawrence, only Laurie, he said.
And I'm not Miss March, only Joe, she said. Do you like parties?
Sometimes, he answered. I've been abroad a lot recently, and I don't know how you do things here.
Abroad? Said Joe.
Oh, did you go to Paris?
We went there last winter.
Can you speak French? She asked.
He said something in French, and Joe listened carefully.
You asked, who is the young lady in the pretty slippers?
It's my sister, Meg, and you knew it was.
Do you think she's pretty?
Yes, he said. She looks so fresh and quiet. This pleased Joe very much, and soon the two of them were talking easily, like old friends.
I hear you're always studying hard, said Joe. Are you going to college soon?
Not for a year or two, he said. I'm 16 next month, and I won't go before I'm 17.
Oh, I wish I was going to college, said Joe.
I hate even the idea of it, said Laurie. Joe wanted to know why, but he looked so serious that instead of asking, she said, Why don't you go and dance? I will if you'll come, too, he answered.
I can't because...
Joe stopped. Because what? You won't tell?
Never.
I've a bad habit of standing near a fire, and I burn my dresses, said Joe. I have to keep still so that no one will see the burn on this one. Now, laugh if you like. But Laurie didn't laugh. Never mind that, he said gently. Please come. Joe smiled. All right, she said. Thank you. When the music stopped, they sat down and began to talk, but Joe saw Meg waving at her. She went over and followed her sister into a side room.
I've turned my foot over and hurt my ankle, said Meg. I can't walk on it, and I don't know how I'm going to get home.
I'm not surprised you've turned your foot over in those stupid high shoes, said Joe. You'll have to get a carriage or stay here all night.
A carriage will cost a lot, said Meg, and I can't stay here for the night because the house is full. I'll just rest until Hannah comes to fetch us. Then do the best I can.
They're going in for supper now, said Joe. I'll stay with you.
No, run and bring me some coffee, said Meg.
Joe found the coffee, but immediately dropped some down the front of her dress. She was cleaning it off with Meg's glove when a friendly voice spoke to her. Can I help? Said Laurie. He had a cup of coffee in one hand and a plate with a cake on it in the other. I was trying to get something for Meg, said Joe. And I was looking for someone to give this to, he said. He fetched more coffee and a cake for Joe. Then the three of them had a happy time talking together until Hannah arrived. Meg completely forgot about her foot and stood up quickly. She cried out with pain, and when Laurie saw that she could not walk, he immediately offered to take them home in his grandfather's carriage. But you can't want to go home yet, said Joe. I always go early, said Laurie. He sat with the driver, and the two girls sat with Hannah inside the carriage and talked excitedly about the party. I had a wonderful time, did you? Said Joe.
Yes, until I hurt myself, said Meg. Sally's friend, Annie Moffat, has asked me to go and stay with her for a week in the spring when Sally does.
Joe told Meg her adventures, and then they were home. They thanked Laurie and went quietly into the house, hoping to wake no one. But as soon as they opened their bedroom door, two little voices cried out,
Tell us about the party! Tell us about the party.
Chapter 4. The House Next Door.
It's so nice to go to parties and drive home in carriages, said Meg the next morning. Other people live like that all the time, and I wish we could. I wish we were rich.
Well, we're not, said Joe. So we must do our work with a smile, the way Mother does. Mr. March had lost most of his money helping a friend. When the two older girls discovered this, they wanted to do something to earn some money for the family, and as soon as they were old enough,
they found work. Meg got a job teaching four small children. It was hard for her to be poor, because she could remember the time when their home had been beautiful, with everything they wanted. And every day at Mrs. King's house, she saw pretty dresses and heard talk of parties and the theater, all the things which Meg loved. Joe went to Aunt March, who needed someone to fetch and carry things and read to her. She was a difficult old lady who complained a lot, but Joe did her best. Beth was much too shy to go to school with other children, so she studied at home with her father. When he went away and her mother was busy with war work, Beth continued to study by herself and helped Hannah keep the home tidy for the others. She also spent long, quiet hours alone, talking to her dolls or playing the old piano. Beth loved music, and although the family could not afford music lessons or a good piano for her, she tried hard to make herself a better musician. Amy drew the most beautiful pictures and wanted to be a famous painter one day. She was a favorite with everyone, except when she complained about having to wear her cousin's old clothes because her mother could not afford to buy new ones for her. One afternoon, a week or two later, Joe went outside to clear the snow away from some of the garden so that Beth could walk there when the sun came out. She looked across to the house next door, a big stone house with lovely things inside that Joe occasionally saw through the open curtains at the windows. But it seemed a lonely, lifeless kind of house, as no children played outside, no motherly face smiled at the windows, and not many people went in and out, except the old gentleman and his grandson. She had not seen the Lawrence boy lately, and wondered if he was away. But suddenly, she saw him looking out of an upstairs window. She threw up a handful of soft snow and called out, "Are you ill?" Laurie opened the window. "I'm almost better, thank you," he said. "I've had a bad cold." "What do you find to do?" said Joe. "Nothing," he said. "They won't let me." "Why don't you get someone to come and see you?" "I don't know anyone." "You know us," said Joe. "So I do," laughed Laurie. "Will you come, please?" "I'll come if Mother will let me. I'll go and ask her. Shut the window and wait until I come." Laurie was excited and began to get ready for Joe's visit. He brushed his hair and tried to make his room tidy. Soon after, he heard voices downstairs. Then a surprised servant ran up to his room.
"There's a young lady to see you, sir," she said.
A moment later, Joe appeared with a box in one hand and Beth's three small cats in the other. "Mother sends her love," she said. "Meg asked me to bring some of her cake, and Beth thought you would like to play with her cats. Isn't she funny?" Laurie laughed. "How kind you all are," he said. "Shall I read to you?" said Joe. "I'd rather talk," he said. "I can talk all day," said Joe, smiling. "Beth says I never know when to stop."
"Is Beth the one who stays at home?"
"Yes, that's Beth. She's a good girl." "The pretty one is Meg, and the curly-haired one is Amy. Is that right?" he said.
"Yes. How did you know?"
Laurie's face became red. "I hear you calling to each other. And you always seem to be having so much fun. Sometimes, in the evenings,
You forget to close your curtains, and I can see you sitting round the fire with your mother. I haven't got a mother. Joe saw the sadness in his eyes. Why don't you come over and see us? Would your grandfather let you? Perhaps, if your mother asked him, said Laurie. He spends a lot of time among his books, and Mr. Brooke, my tutor, doesn't live here. So I haven't anyone to go out with. Do you like your school? I don't go to school. I go out to work, to my aunt's, said Joe. She described the difficult old lady and made him laugh with her stories. She told him all about her sisters, the plays they acted, and their hopes and fears for their father. Then they talked about books, and Joe discovered that Laurie loved them as much as she did. Come and see our library, he said. Grandfather is out, so you needn't be afraid. I'm not afraid of anything, replied Joe. He took her down to a room where the walls were covered with books and pictures. You should be the happiest boy in the world, said Joe, sitting in a big armchair and looking round. A person can't live on books, he said. Suddenly, a bell rang. Joe jumped up out of the chair. It's your grandfather, she said. What if it is? Said Laurie with a smile. You're not afraid of anything, remember? Perhaps I am a little bit afraid of him, said Joe. The servant came in at that moment.
The doctor is here to see you, sir, she said to Laurie.
Can I leave you for a minute or two, Joe? He said.
Yes,
I'm very happy here, said Joe. He went away, and Joe was staring at a large picture of the old gentleman when the door opened again. Without turning, she said, I won't be afraid of him, because he's got kind eyes, although his mouth looks hard and cold. He's not as handsome as my grandfather, but I like him. Thank you, said a deep voice behind her. She turned quickly and saw old Mr. Lawrence. Joe's face turned a bright red, and she wanted to run away. But the old man's eyes looked kinder than those in the picture and seemed to have a smile in them.
So, you're not afraid of me, eh?
He said.
Not much, sir.
But I'm not as handsome as your grandfather.
Not quite, sir.
But you like me.
He laughed and shook hands with her.
Now, what have you been doing with my grandson?
Trying to cheer him up, sir, said Joe. He seems a bit lonely.
Then come and have some tea with us.
Laurie was very surprised to see Joe with his grandfather, but was soon talking and laughing happily with Joe. The old man watched the two young people and noticed the change in his grandson.
She's right, he thought. The boy does need cheering up.
After tea, they went into a room where there was a large and beautiful piano.
Do you play? Joe asked Laurie.
Sometimes, he answered. Play now. I want to hear it so I can tell Beth. So Laurie played, and Joe listened. Afterwards, Mr. Lawrence said,
He plays quite well, but I want him to do well in more important things. Now, I hope you'll come again.
He shook hands with her.
Good night, Joe.
Laurie walked to the door with her. He doesn't like to hear me play, he said.
Why not? Said Joe.
I'll tell you one day, he said. When Joe told the family of her afternoon's adventures, they all wanted to go and visit the big house. Mother, why doesn't Mr. Lawrence like to hear Laurie play the piano? Asked Joe. Laurie's father married an Italian lady, a musician, said Mrs. March. The old man didn't like her and never saw his son after they were married. Laurie was born in Italy, but his parents died when he was a child, and his grandfather brought him home. Laurie loves music, and I expect his grandfather is afraid he'll want to be a musician like his mother. Laurie should be a musician if he wants to be, said Joe. Sending him to college will just make him unhappy. End of Side 1.